Garion shook his head. I'm not sure if he even understood what we were telling him. He was not altogether rational, Silk grunted. When he wakes up, we'll have to try again. A sly grin crossed the little man's face. I have had a certain amount of luck negotiating with sick people, he said. Isn't that sort of contemptible? Of course it is, but it gets results. Later that morning, Garion and his rat-faced friend stopped by the Emperor's room, ostensibly to inquire about his health. Polgara and Sadi were seated on either side of the bed, and Andal sat quietly in the corner. The vines that had enveloped the narrow cot had been pulled aside, but the air in the room was still heavy with the fragrance of the small lavender flowers. The sick man was propped into a half-sitting position by pillows, but his eyes were closed as Silk and Garion entered. His cat lay contentedly purring at the foot of the bed. How is he? Garion asked quietly.
He has been awake a few times, Sadi replied. There are still some traces of Thalet in his extremities, but they seem to be dissipating.
The eunuch was picking curiously at one of the small flowers.
I wonder if these would work if they were distilled down to an essence, he mused. Or perhaps an attar. It might be very interesting to wear a perfume that could ward off any poison.
He frowned slightly.
And I wonder if they would be effective against snake venom.
Why don't you have Zith bite someone? Silk suggested.
Then you can test it.
Would you like to volunteer, Prince Keldar?
No, Zadi, Silk declined.
Thanks all the same.
He looked at the red case lying open on the floor in the corner.
Is she confined, by the way? He asked nervously.
She is sleeping, Zadi replied. She always takes a little nap after breakfast.
Garion looked at the dozing emperor.
Is he coherent at all? When he's awake, I mean. His mind seems to be clearing,
Polgara told him.
Hysteria and delirium are some of the symptoms brought on by Thalet, Zadi said. Growing rationality is an almost certain sign of recovery.
Is that you, Belgarian?
Zakath asked, almost in a whisper and without opening his eyes.
Yes,
Garion replied.
How are you feeling?
Weak. Light-headed. Every muscle in my body screams like an abscessed tooth. Aside from that, I'm fine.
He opened his eyes with a wry smile.
What happened? I seem to have lost track of things.
Garion glanced briefly at Polgara, and she nodded.
You were poisoned, he told the sick man.
Zakath looked a bit surprised.
It must not have been a very good one, then.
Actually, it's one of the very best, Your Imperial Majesty,
Zadi disagreed mildly.
It has always been universally lethal.
I am dying, then?
Zakath said it with a peculiar kind of satisfaction, almost as if he welcomed the idea.
Ah, well, he sighed. That should solve many problems.
Oh, I'm very sorry, Your Majesty,
Silk said with mock regret.
But I think you'll live.
Belgarath tampers with the normal course of events from time to time. It is a bad habit he picked up in his youth, but a man needs some vices, I suppose.
Zakath smiled weakly.
You are a droll little fellow, Prince Keldar.
If you're really keen on dying, though, Silk added outrageously,
we could always wake Zith, One nip from her almost guarantees perpetual slumber.
Zith,
Asadi's pet. A little green snake. She could even curl up at your ear after she bites you and purr you into eternity.
Zakath sighed, and his eyes drooped shut again.
I think we should let him sleep, Polgara said quietly.
Not just yet, Lady Polgara, the Emperor said. I have shunned sleep and the dreams which infest it for so long, that it comes unnaturally now.
You must sleep, Khal Zakath,
Andel told him.
There are ways to banish evil dreams, and sleep is the greatest healer.
Zakath sighed and shook his head.
I am afraid you won't be able to banish these dreams, Andel.
And then he frowned slightly.
Sadi, is hallucination one of the symptoms of the poison I was given?
It's possible, the eunuch admitted. What horrors have you seen?
Not a horror, Zakath replied. I seem to see the face of a young woman. Her eyes are bound with a strip of cloth. A peculiar peace comes over me when I see her face.
That was not an hallucination, Khal Zakath, Andel told him.
Who is this strange blind child, then?
My mistress, Andel said proudly. The face which came to you in your direst hour was the face of Tiradus, the seeress of Kel, upon whose decision rests the fate of all the world, and of all other worlds as well.
So great a responsibility to lie upon such slender shoulders, Zakath said.
It is her task, Andel said simply.
The sick man seemed to fall again into a doze, his lips lightly touched with a peculiar smile. Then his eyes opened again, seemingly more alert now.
Am I healed, Tzadi? He asked the shaven-headed eunuch. Has your excellent Naishin poison quite run its course?
Oh, Tzadi replied speculatively. I wouldn't say that you're entirely well yet, Your Majesty. But I would guess that you are out of any immediate danger.
Good,
Zakath said crisply, trying to shoulder his way up into a sitting position. Geryon reached out to help him.
And has the knave who poisoned me been apprehended yet?
Tzadi shook his head.
Not as far as I know, he answered.
I think that might be the first order of business, then. I am starting to feel a little hungry, and I would rather not go through this again. Is the poison common in Tul Murgos?
Tzadi frowned.
Murgo law forbids poisons and drugs, Your Majesty. They are a backward sort of people. The Dagashi assassins probably have access to Talat, though.
You think my poisoner might have been a Dagashi, then?
Tzadi shrugged.
Most assassinations in Tol Murgos are carried out by the Dagashi. They are efficient and discreet.
Zakath's eyes narrowed in thought.
That would seem to point a finger directly at Urgot, then. The Dagashi are expensive, and Urgot has access to the royal treasury.
Silk grimaced.
No, he declared.
Urgot would not do that. A knife between your shoulder blades, maybe, but not a poison.
How can you be so sure, Keldar?
I know him, Silk replied a bit lamely. He's weak and a little timid, but he would not be a party to a poisoning. It is a contemptible way to resolve political differences.
Prince Keldar,
Tzadi protested. Oh, except in Nyssa, of course, Silk conceded. One always needs to take quaint local customs into account. He pulled at his long, pointed nose. I'll admit that Urgith would not grieve too much if you woke up dead some morning, he said to the Malorian Emperor. But it is all just a little too pat. If your generals believed that it was Urgith who had arranged to have you killed, they would stay here for the next 10 generations, trying to obliterate all of Murgodom, wouldn't they?
I would assume so, Sakath said.
Who would benefit the most by disposing of you, and rather effectively making sure that the bulk of your army does not return to Meloria in the foreseeable future? Not Urgith, certainly. More likely it would be somebody in Meloria who wants a free hand there.
Silk squared his shoulders.
Why don't you let Lysel and I do a little snooping around before you lock your mind in stone on this? Obvious things always make me suspicious.
That is all very well, Keldar, Sakath said rather testily. But how can I be sure that my next meal won't have another dose of exotic spices in it?
You have at your bedside the finest cook in the world, the rat-faced man said, pointing grandly at Polgara. And I can absolutely guarantee that she won't poison you. Oh, she might turn you into a radish if you offend her, but she'd never poison you. All right, Silk, that will do, Polgara told him. I'm only paying tribute to your extraordinary gifts, Polgara. Her eyes grew hard. I think that perhaps it might be time for me to be on my way, Silk said to Geryon. Wise decision, Geryon murmured. The little man turned and quickly left the room.
Is he really as good as he pretends to be?
Sakath asked curiously.
Polgara nodded. Between them, Keldar and Lysel can probably ferret out any secret in the world. Silk doesn't always like it, but they are almost a perfect team. And now, Your Majesty, what would you like for breakfast?
A curious exchange was taking place in the corner. Throughout the previous conversation, Geryon had heard a faint, drowsy purr coming from Zith's earthenware bottle. Either the little snake was expressing a general sense of contentment, or it may have been one of the peculiarities of her species to purr while sleeping. Sakath's pregnant, mackerel-striped cat, attracted by that sound, jumped down from the bed and curiously waddled toward Zith's little home. Absently, probably without even thinking about it, she responded to the purr coming from the bottle with one of her own. She sniffed at the bottle, then tentatively touched it with one soft paw. The peculiar duet of purring continued. Then, perhaps because Tzadi had not stoppered the bottle tightly enough, or because she had long since devised this simple means of opening her front door, the little snake nudged the cork out of the bottle with her blunt nose. Both creatures continued to purr, although the cat was now obviously afire with curiosity. For a time, Zith did not reveal herself, but lurked shyly in her bottle, still purring. Then, cautiously, she poked out her head, her forked tongue flickering as she tested the air. The cat jumped straight up to a height of about 3 feet, giving vent to a startled yowl. Zith retreated immediately back into the safety of her house, though she continued to purr. Warily, but still burning with curiosity, the cat approached the bottle again, moving 1 foot at a time.
Tzadi,
Sakath said, his voice filled with concern.
There is no immediate danger, Your Majesty, the eunuch assured him. Zith never bites while she is purring.
Again, the little green snake slid her head out of the bottle. This time, the cat recoiled only slightly. Then, curiosity overcoming her natural aversion to reptiles, she continued her slow advance, her nose reaching out toward this remarkable creature. Zith, still purring, also extended her blunt nose. Their noses touched, and both flinched back slightly. Then they cautiously sniffed at each other. The cat with her nose, the snake with her tongue. Both were purring loudly now.
"Astonishing," Zadi murmured. "I think they actually like each other."
"Zadi, please," Zakath said plaintively. "I don't know how you feel about your snake, but I am rather fond of my cat, and she is about to become a mother."
"I'll speak with them, Your Majesty," Zadi assured him. "I am not sure that they will listen, but I will definitely speak with them."
Belgarath had once again retired to the library, and Geryon found him later that day poring over a large map of northern Meloria.
"Oh," he said, looking up as Geryon entered. "There you are. I was just about to send for you. Come over here and look at this."
Geryon went to the table.
"The appearance of this Minga fellow might just work to our advantage, you know."
"I don't quite follow that, Grandfather."
"Zandramas is here, at Asheba, right?"
Belgarath stabbed his finger at a spot in the representation of the Kerendese Mountains.
"Yes,"
Geryon said. "And Minga is moving west and south out of Kalida. Over here."
The old man poked at the map again.
"That's what Braedor says."
"He has got her blocked off from most of the continent. She's been very careful here in Thulmurgos, Geryon, to avoid the populated areas. There is no reason to believe that she is going to change once she gets to Meloria. Irvan is going to be to the south of her at Malyaska, and the wastes to the north are virtually impassable, even though it is nearly summer."
"Summer?"
"In the northern half of the world it is."
"Oh, yes, I keep forgetting."
Geryon peered at the map.
"Grandfather, we don't have any idea of where the place, which is no more, might be. When Zandramas leaves Asheba, she could go in any direction."
Belgarath squinted at the map.
"I don't think so, Geryon. In the light of all that has happened in Meloria, coupled with the fact that by now she knows that we are on her trail, I think she almost has to be trying to get back to her power base in Darshiva. Everybody in the world is after her. She needs help."
"We certainly aren't threatening her all that much," Geryon said moodily. "We can't even get out of Thulmurgos."
"That's what I wanted to talk to you about. You have got to persuade Zakath that it is vital for us to leave here, and to get to Meloria as quickly as possible."
"Persuade?"
"Just do whatever you have to, Geryon. There is a great deal at stake."
"Why me?"
Geryon said it without thinking. Belgarath gave him a long, steady look.
"Sorry,"
Geryon muttered.
"Forget that I said it."
"All right. I'll do that."
Late that evening, Zakath's cat gave birth to 7 healthy kittens, while Zith hovered in anxious attendance, warning off all other observers with ominous hisses. Peculiarly, the only person the protective little reptile would allow near the newborn kittens was Velvet. Geryon had little success during the next couple of days in his efforts to steer his conversations with the convalescing Zakath around to the subject of the necessity for returning to Meloria. The Emperor usually pleaded a lingering weakness as a result of his poisoning, though Geryon privately suspected subterfuge on that score, since the man appeared to have more than enough energy for his usual activities and only protested exhaustion when Geryon wanted to talk about a voyage.
On the evening of the fourth day, however, he decided to try negotiation one last time before turning to more direct alternatives. He found Zakath seated in the chair near his bed with a book in his hands. The dark circles beneath his eyes had vanished, the trembling had disappeared entirely, and he seemed totally alert.
"Ah, Belgarian," he said almost cheerfully. "So good of you to stop by."
"I thought I'd come in and put you to sleep again," Garion replied with a slightly exaggerated sarcasm.
"Have I been that obvious?" Zakath asked.
"Yes, as a matter of fact, you have. Every time I mention the words ship and Meloria in the same sentence, your eyes snap shut, Zakath. We have got to talk about this, and time is starting to run out."
Zakath passed one hand across his eyes with some show of weariness.
"Let me put it this way," Garion pressed on. "Belgarath is starting to get impatient. I am trying to keep our discussions civil, but if he steps in, I can almost guarantee that they are going to turn unpleasant very quickly."
Zakath lowered his hand and his eyes narrowed.
"That sounds vaguely like a threat, Belgarion."
"No," Garion disagreed. "As a matter of fact, it's in the nature of friendly advice. If you want to stay here in Tol Murgos, that's up to you. But we have to get to Meloria, and soon."
"And if I choose not to permit you to go?"
"Permit?" Garion laughed. "Zakath, did you grow up in the same world with the rest of us? Have you got even the remotest idea of what you were talking about?"
"I think that concludes this interview, Belgarion," the Emperor said coldly.
He rose stiffly to his feet and turned to his bed. As usual, his cat had deposited her mewling little brood in the center of his coverlet, then gone off to nap alone in her wool-lined box in the corner. The irritated Emperor looked with some exasperation at the furry little puddle on his bed.
"You have my permission to withdraw, Belgarion," he said over his shoulder.
Then he reached down with both hands to scoop up the cluster of kittens. Zith reared up out of the very center of the furry heap, fixed him with a cold eye, and hissed warningly.
"Thorax teeth," Zakath swore, jerking his hands away. "This is going too far. Go tell Sadi that I want his accursed snake out of my room immediately."
"He has taken her out four times already, Zakath," Garion said mildly. "She just keeps crawling back." He suppressed a grin. "Maybe she likes you."
"Are you trying to be funny?"
"Me?
Get that snake out of here."
Garion put his hands behind his back.
"Not me, Zakath. I'll go get Zadi."
In the hallway outside, however, he encountered Velvet, who was coming toward the Emperor's room with a mysterious smile on her face.
"Do you think you could move Zith?" Garion asked her. "She's in the middle of Zakath's bed with those kittens."
"You can move her, Belgarion,"
the blonde girl said, smiling, the dimples into her cheeks.
"She trusts you."
"I think I'd rather not try that."
The two of them went back into the Emperor's bedchamber.
"Margrethain,"
Zakath greeted her courteously, inclining his head. She curtsied.
"Your Majesty."
"Can you deal with this?"
he asked, pointing at the furry pile on his bed with the snake still half-reared out of the center, her eyes alert.
"Of course, Your Majesty."
She approached the bed, and the snake flickered her tongue nervously.
"Oh, do stop that, Zith,"
the blonde girl chided. Then she lifted the front of her skirt to form a kind of pouch and began picking up kittens and depositing them in her improvised basket. Last of all, she lifted Zith and laid her in the middle. She crossed the room and casually put them all into the box with the mother cat, who opened one golden eye, made room for her kittens and their bright green nursemaid, and promptly went back to sleep.
"Isn't that sweet?"
Velvet murmured softly. Then she turned back to Zakath.
"Oh, by the way, Your Majesty, Keldar and I managed to find out who it was who poisoned you."
"What?" She nodded, frowning slightly.
"It came as something of a surprise, actually."
The Emperor's eyes had become intent.
"You are sure?"
"As sure as one can be in these cases. You seldom find an eyewitness to a poisoning. But he was in the kitchen at the right time. He left right after you fell ill, and we know him by reputation."
She smiled at Geryon.
"Have you noticed how people always tend to remember a man with white eyes?"
"Narrados?"
Geryon exclaimed.
"Surprising, isn't it?"
"Who is Narrados?"
"He works for Zandramas," Geryon replied. He frowned.
"That doesn't make any sense, Velvet. Why would Zandramas want to kill him? Wouldn't she want to keep him alive?"
She spread her hands.
"I don't know, Belgarian. Not yet, anyway."
"Velvet?"
Zakath asked in puzzlement. She smiled, the dimples into her cheeks again.
"Isn't it silly?"
she laughed.
"I suppose these little nicknames are a form of affection, though. Belgarian's question is to the point, however. Can you think of any reason why Zandramas might want to kill you?"
"Not immediately. But we can wring that answer out of her when I catch her. And I will make a point of doing that, even if I have to take Tol Burgos apart, stone by stone."
"She isn't here,"
Geryon said absently, still struggling with the whole idea.
"She's at Ashaba, in the house of Torak."
Zakath's eyes narrowed suspiciously.
"Isn't this convenient, Belgarian? I happened to get poisoned right after your arrival. Belgarath happens to cure me. Keldar and Lezel happen to discover the identity of the poisoner, who happens to work for Zandramas, who happens to be at Ashaba, which happens to be in Meloria, a place which just happens to be where you so desperately want to go. The coincidence staggers the imagination, wouldn't you say?"
"Zakath, you're starting to make me tired," Geryon
said irritably.
"If I decide that I need a boat to get to Meloria, I'll take one. All that's kept me from doing that so far are the manners Lady Polgara drilled into me when I was a boy."
"And how do you propose to leave this house?"
Zakath snapped, his temper also starting to rise. That did it. The rage that came over Geryon was totally irrational. It was the result of 100 delays and stumbling blocks and petty interruptions that had dogged him for almost a year now. He reached over his shoulder, ripped Iron Grip's sword from its sheath, and peeled the concealing leather sleeve from its hilt. He held the great blade before him, and literally threw his will at the orb. The sword exploded into blue flame.
"How do I propose to leave this house?"
he half shouted at the stunned Emperor.
"I'll use this for a key. It works sort of like this."
He straightened his arm, leveling the blazing sword at the door.
"Burst!"
Zakath stumbled back, staring at the hallway outside that had suddenly been revealed, and at the rubble that filled it, rubble that had a moment before been the solid 2-foot-thick stone wall of his bedroom.
"My goodness,"
Velvet murmured mildly. Knowing that it was silly and melodramatic, but still caught up in the towering irrational anger, Garion caught the stunned Zakath by the arm with his left hand and gestured with the sword he held in his right. "Now, we are going to talk with Belgarath," he announced. "We will go through the hallways if you'll give me your word not to call soldiers every time we go around a corner. Otherwise, we'll just cut straight through the house. The library is sort of in that direction, isn't it?" He pointed at one of the still-standing walls with his sword.
"Belgarion,"
Velvet chided him gently.
"Not really. That's no way to behave. Khal Zakath has been a very courteous host. I am sure that now that he understands the situation, he will be more than happy to cooperate, won't you, Your Imperial Majesty?"
She smiled winsomely at the Emperor.
"We wouldn't want the Riven King to get really angry, now would we? There are so many breakable things about. Windows, walls, houses, the city of Rahaga, that sort of thing."
They found Belgarath in the library again. He was reading a small scroll, and there was a large tankard at his elbow. "Something's come up," Garion said shortly as he entered.
"Oh?"
"Velvet tells us that she and Silk found out that it was Naradus who poisoned Zakath."
"Naradus?" The old man blinked. "Well, that's a surprise, isn't it?"
"What's she up to, Grandfather? Zandramas, I mean."
"I'm not sure."
Belgarath looked at Zakath.
"Who is likely to succeed you if somebody manages to put you to sleep?"
Zakath shrugged.
"There are a few distant cousins scattered about, mostly in the Messene Islands and Tiranta. The line of the succession is a little murky."
"Perhaps that is what she has in mind, Belgarath,"
Velvet said seriously.
"If there is any truth in that Grolum prophecy you found in Rakaga, she's got to have an Angrak king with her at the time of the final meeting. A tame king would suit her purposes much better than someone like His Majesty here, some third or fourth cousin she could crown and anoint and proclaim king. Then she could have her Grolums keep an eye on him and deliver him to her at the proper time."
"Yeah, it's possible, I suppose," he agreed. "I think there may be a bit more to it than that, though. Zandramas has never been that straightforward about anything before. I hope you all realize that I have not the faintest notion of what you are talking about," Zakath said irritably. "Just how much does he know?" Belgarath asked Garion.
"Not very much, Grandfather."
"All right. Maybe if he does know what is going on, he won't be quite so difficult."
He turned to the Malorian Emperor. "Have you ever heard of the Mrin Codex?"
"I have heard that it was written by a madman, like most of the other so-called prophecies."
"How about the Child of Light and the Child of Dark?"
"That is part of the standard gibberish used by religious hysterics."
"Zakath, you are going to have to believe in something. This is going to be very difficult for you to grasp if you don't.
Would you settle for a temporary suspension of skepticism?" the Emperor countered. "Fair enough, I suppose. All right, now. This gets complicated. So you are going to have to pay attention. Listen carefully, and stop me if there is anything that you do not understand."
The old man then proceeded to sketch in the ancient story of the accident that had occurred before the world had begun, and the divergence of the 2 possible courses of the future, and of the 2 consciousnesses which had somehow infused those courses.
All right, Zakath said. That is fairly standard theology so far. I have had Grolems preaching the same nonsense since I was a boy.
Belgrath nodded. I just wanted to start this off from common ground. He went on, then, telling Zakath of the events spanning the aeons between the cracking of the world and the Battle of Omimbre.
Our point of view is somewhat different, Zakath murmured.
It would be, Belgrath agreed.
All right. There were 500 years between Vomimbre and the theft of the orb by Zadar, the apostate.
Recovery, Zakath corrected.
The orb was stolen from Tol Mishrek by Iron Grip the thief and by...
He stopped, and his eyes suddenly widened as he stared at the seedy-looking old man.
Yes, Belgrath said. I really was there, Zakath. And I was there 2,000 years before, when Torak originally stole the orb from my master.
I have been sick, Belgrath, the Emperor said weakly, sinking into a chair. My nerves are not really up for too many of these shocks.
Belgrath looked at him puzzled.
Their Majesties were having a little discussion,
Velvet explained brightly.
King Belgarion gave the Emperor a little demonstration of some of the more flamboyant capabilities of the sword of the Riven King. The Emperor was quite impressed. So was most everybody else who happened to be in that part of the house.
Belgrath gave Garion a chill look.
Playing again? He asked.
Garion tried to reply, but there was nothing he could really say.
All right. Let's get on with this.
Belgrath continued briskly.
What happened after the emergence of Garion here is all recent history, so I am sure that you are familiar with it.
Garion? Zakath asked.
A more common and familiar form. Belgarion is a bit ostentatious, wouldn't you say?
No more so than Belgrath.
I have worn Belgrath for almost 7,000 years, Zakath. And I have sort of rubbed off the rough edges and corners. Garion has only been wearing his bell for 12 years, and it still squeaks when he turns around too quickly.
Garion felt slightly offended by that.
Anyway, the old man continued, after Torak was dead, Garion and Zenedra got married. About 1 year or so ago, she gave birth to a son. Garion's attention at that time was on the bear colt. Someone had tried to kill Zenedra, and had succeeded in killing the Riven Warder.
I have heard about that, Zakath said.
Anyway, he was in the process of stamping out the colt. He stamps quite well, once he puts his mind to it, when someone crept into the citadel at Riva and abducted his infant son, my great-grandson.
No, Zakath exclaimed.
Oh, yes, Belgrath continued grimly. We thought that it was the cult, and marched to Rehan in Dresnia, their headquarters. But it was all a clever ruse. Zandromos had abducted Prince Geron and misdirected us to Rehan. The leader of the cult turned out to be Herakan, one of the henchmen of Ervan. Is this coming too fast for you?
Zakath's face was startled, and his eyes had gone wide again.
No, he said, swallowing hard. I think I can keep up.
Well, there's not too much more. After we discovered our mistakes, we took up the abductor's trail. We know that she is going to Meloria, to a place which is no more. That's where the Sardian is. We have to stop her, or at least arrive there at the same time. Saradus believes that when we all arrive at this place which is no more, there is going to be one of those confrontations between the Child of Light and the Child of Dark, which have been happening since before the beginning of time, except that this is going to be the last one. She will choose between them, and that is supposed to be the end of it. I am afraid that it is at that point that my skepticism reasserts itself, Belgarath. You don't actually expect me to believe that these two shadowy figures that predate the world are going to arrive at this mysterious place to grapple once more, do you? What makes you think they are shadowy? The spirits that are at the core of the two possible destinies infuse real people to act as their instruments during these meetings. Right now, for example, Zandramos is the child of Dark. It used to be Torak, until Geryon killed him. And who is the child of Light? I thought that would be obvious.
Zakath turned to stare incredulously into Geryon's blue eyes.
You? He gasped.
Well, that's what they tell me, Geryon replied.
Chapter 5 Khal Zakath, Dread Emperor of Boundless Meloria, looked first at Belgarath, then again at Geryon, and finally at Velvet.
Why do I feel that I am losing control of things here?
He asked.
When your people came here, you were more or less my prisoners. Now, somehow, I am yours.
We told you some things you didn't know before. That is all,
Belgarath told him.
Or some things that you cleverly made up.
Why would we do that?
I can think of any number of reasons. For the sake of argument, I will accept your story about the abduction of Belgarian's son. But don't you see how that makes all your motives completely obvious? You need my aid in your search. All this mystical nonsense and your wild story about Urgot's parentage could have been designed to divert me from my campaign here in Tormurgos and to trick me into returning with you to Meloria. Everything you have done or said since you came here could have been directed toward that end.
Do you really think that we would do that? Geryon asked him.
Belgarion, if I had a son, and someone had abducted him, I would do anything to get him back. I sympathize with your situation, but I have my own concerns, and they are here, not in Meloria. I'm sorry, but the more I think about this, the less of it I believe. I could not have misjudged the world so much. Demons, prophecies, magic, immortal old men. Oh, it's all been very entertaining, but I do not believe one word of it.
Not even what the orb showed you about Urgot? Geryon asked.
Please, Belgarion, don't treat me like a child.
Zakath's lips were twisted into an ironic smile.
Isn't it altogether possible that the poison had already crept into my mind? And is it not also possible that you, like any other of the charlatans who infest village fairs, used a show of mysterious lights and suggestions to make me see what you wanted me to see?
What do you believe, Khal Zakath?
Velvet asked him.
What I can see and touch. Precious little else.
So great a skepticism,
she murmured.
Then you do not accept one single out of the ordinary thing?
Not that I can think of, no.
Not even the peculiar gift of the seers at Kel? It has been fairly well documented, you know.
He frowned slightly.
Yes, he admitted. As a matter of fact, it has.
How can you document a vision? Geryon asked curiously.
The Grolems were seeking to discredit the Seers,
Zakath replied.
They felt that the easiest way to do that was to have these pronouncements about the future written down, and then wait to see what happened. The bureaucracy was instructed to keep records. So far, not one of the predictions of the Seers has proven false.
Then you do believe that the Seers have the ability to know things about the past, and the present, and the future, in ways that the rest of us might not completely understand?
Zakath pursed his lips.
All right, Margravain, he said reluctantly. I will concede that the Seers have certain abilities that have not been explained as yet.
Do you believe that a Seer could lie to you?
Good girl,
Belgrath murmured approvingly.
No,
Zakath replied after a moment's thought.
A Seer is incapable of lying. Their truthfulness is proverbial.
Well, then,
she said with a dimpled smile,
all you need to do to find out if what we have told you is the truth is to send for a Seer, isn't it?
Lucille, that could take weeks. We don't have that much time.
Oh, I don't think it would take all that long. If I remember correctly, Lady Polgara said that Andel summoned Zaradus when His Majesty here lay dying. I am fairly sure we could persuade her to do it for us again.
Well, Zakath, Belgarath said, will you agree to accept what Zaradus tells you as the truth?
The Emperor squinted at him suspiciously, searching for some kind of subterfuge.
You have manipulated me into a corner, he accused.
He thought about it.
All right, Belgarath. I will accept whatever Zaradus says as the truth. If you will agree to do the same.
Done, then, Belgarath said. Let's send for Andel and get on with this.
As Velvet stepped out into the hall to speak with one of the guards who trailed along behind the Emperor wherever he went, Zakath leaned back in his chair.
I cannot believe that I am even considering all the wild impossibilities that you have been telling me.
Garion exchanged a quick look with his grandfather, and then they both laughed.
Something funny, gentlemen.
Just a family joke, Zakath, Belgarath told him.
Garion and I have been discussing the possible and the impossible since he was about 9 years old. He was even more stubborn about it than you are.
It gets easier to accept after the first shock wears off, Garion added. It's sort of like swimming in very cold water. Once you get numb, it doesn't hurt quite so much.
It was not long until Velvet re-entered the room with the hooded Andel at her side.
I believe you said that the Seeress of Kel is your mistress, Andel,
Zakath said to her.
Yes, she is, Your Majesty.
Can you summon her?
Her semblance, Your Majesty, if there is need, and if she will consent to come.
I believe there is need, Andel. Belgarath has told me certain things that I have to have confirmed. I know that Zaradus speaks only the truth. Belgarath, on the other hand, has a more dubious reputation.
He threw a rather sly, sidelong glance at the old man. Belgarath grinned at him and winked.
I will speak with my mistress, Your Majesty,
Andel said,
and entreat her to send her semblance here. Should she consent, I beg of you to ask your questions quickly. The effort of reaching half around the world exhausts her, and she is not robust.
Then the Delasian woman knelt reverently and lowered her head, and Garion once again heard that peculiar murmur as of many voices, followed by a long moment of silence. Again, there was that same shimmer in the air, When it had cleared, the hooded and blindfolded form of Ceradus stood there.
"We thank you for coming, Horisiris," Zakath said to her, in an oddly respectful tone of voice. "My guests here have told me certain things that I am loath to believe, but I have agreed to accept whatever you can confirm."
"I will tell thee what I can, Zakath," she replied. "Some things are hidden from me, and some others may not yet be revealed."
"I understand the limitations, Ceradus. Belgarion tells me that Urgot, the king of the Murgos, is not of the blood of Tar Urgas. Is this true?"
"It is," she replied simply. "King Urgot's father was an Elon."
"Are any of the sons of Tar Urgas still alive?"
"Nay, Zakath. The line of Tar Urgas became extinct some 12 years ago when his last son was strangled in a cellar in Rakoska upon the command of Oskatat, King Urgot's seneschal."
Zakath sighed and shook his head sadly.
"And so it has ended. My enemy's line passed unnoticed from this world in a dark cellar, passed so quietly that I could not even rejoice that they were gone, nor curse the ones who stole them from my grasp."
"Revenge is a hollow thing, Zakath."
"It is the only thing I have had for almost 30 years now."
He sighed again, then straightened his shoulders.
"Did Zandramas really steal Belgarion's son?"
"She did, and now she carries him to the place which is no more."
"And where is that?"
Her face grew very still.
"I may not reveal that,"
she replied finally.
"But the Sardian is there."
"Can you tell me what the Sardian is?"
"It is one half of the stone which was divided."
"Is it really all that important?"
"In all of Angorak there is no thing of greater worth. The Grolems all know this. Irvan would give all of his wealth for it. Zandramas would abandon the adoration of multitudes for it. Manga would give his soul for it. Indeed, he hath done so already in his enlistment of demons to aid him. Even Akachak, Harak of Rak Urga, would abandon his ascendancy in Tol Murgos to possess it."
"How is it that a thing of such value has escaped my notice?"
"Thine eyes are on worldly matters, Zakath. The Sardian is not of this world. No more than the other half of the divided stone is of this world."
"The other half?"
"That which the Angoraks call Tragyaska, and the men of the West call the Orb of Aldur. Tragsardius and Tragyaska were sundered in the moment which saw the birth of the opposing necessities."
Zakath's face had grown quite pale, and he clasped his hands tightly in front of him to control their trembling.
"It is all true, then?"
he asked in a hoarse voice.
"All, Khal Zakath. All."
"Even that Belgarion and Zandramas are the child of light and the child of dark?"
"Yes, they are."
He started to ask her another question, but she raised her hand.
"My time is short, Zakath, and I must now reveal something of greater import unto thee. Know that thy life doth approach a momentous crossroads. Put aside thy lust for power and thy hunger for revenge. They are but childish toys. Return thou even to Melzeth to prepare thyself for thy part in the meeting which is to come."
"My part?"
He sounded startled.
"Thy name and thy task are written in the stars."
"And what task is this?"
"I will instruct thee when thou art ready to understand what it is that thou must do. First thou must cleanse thy heart of the grief and remorse which has haunted thee."
His face grew still, and he sighed.
I am afraid not, Saradas. What you ask is quite impossible.
Then thou wilt surely die before the seasons turn again. Consider what I have told thee, and consider it well, Emperor of Meloria. I will speak with thee anon.
And then she shimmered and vanished. Zakath stared at the empty spot where she had stood. His face was pale, his jaws were set.
Well, Zakath, are you convinced?
Asked Belgarath. The Emperor rose from his chair and began to pace up and down.
This is an absolute absurdity, he burst out suddenly in an agitated voice. I know,
Belgarath replied calmly.
But a willingness to believe the absurd is an indication of faith. It might just be that faith is the first step in the preparation that Saradas mentioned. It's not that I don't want to believe, Belgarath, Zakath said in a strangely humble tone. It's just... Nobody said that it was going to be easy. But you have done things before that were not easy, haven't you?
Zakath dropped into his chair again, his eyes lost in thought.
Oh, why me, he said plaintively. Why do I have to get involved in this?
Garion suddenly laughed. Zakath gave him a cold stare. I'm sorry, Garion apologized. But I've been saying, why me, since I was about 14. Nobody has ever given me a satisfactory answer. But you get used to the injustice of it after a while.
It's not that I'm trying to avoid any kind of responsibility, Belgarion. It's just that I can't see what possible help I can be. You people are going to track down Zandramas, retrieve your son, and destroy the Sardian. Isn't that about it?
It is a little more complicated than that, Belgarath told him.
Destroying the Sardian is going to involve something rather cataclysmic. I don't quite follow that. Can't you just wave your hand and make it cease to exist? You are a sorcerer, after all. Or so they say.
That's forbidden, Garion said automatically. You can't unmake things. That's what Tuchik tried to do. And he destroyed himself.
Zakath frowned and looked at Belgarath.
I thought you killed him.
Most people do, the old man shrugged. It adds to my reputation. So I don't argue with them. He tugged at one earlobe.
No, he said. I think we are going to have to see this all the way through to the end. I'm fairly sure that the only way the Sardian can be destroyed is as a result of the final confrontation between the Child of Light and the Child of Dark.
He paused, then sat up suddenly, his face intent.
I think Saradas slipped, and gave us something she had not intended, though. She said that the Grolem priesthood all desperately wanted the Sardian, and she included Minga in her list. Wouldn't that seem to indicate that Minga is also a Grolem?
He looked at Andel.
Is your young mistress subject to these little lapses?
Saradas cannot misspeak herself, Holy Belgarath, the healer replied. Isiris does not speak in her own voice, but in the voice of her vision.
Then she wanted us to know that Minga is, or was, a Grolem, and that the reason he is raising demons is to help him in his search for the Sardian.
He thought about it.
There's another rather bleak possibility, too. It might just be that his demons are using him to get the Sardian for themselves. Maybe that's why they are so docile where he is concerned. Demons by themselves are bad enough.
But if the Sardian has the same power as the orb, we definitely don't want it to fall into their hands.
He turned to Zakath.
Well, he said. Well, what? Are you with us or against us? Isn't that a little blunt? Yes, it is. But it saves time, and time is starting to be a factor.
Zakath sank lower in his chair, his expression unreadable.
I find very little benefit for me in this proposed arrangement.
You get to keep living,
Geryon reminded him. Saradis said that you would die before spring if you don't take up the task that she's going to lay in front of you. Zakath's faint smile was melancholy, and the dead indifference returned to his eyes.
My life has not really been so enjoyable that I would consider going out of my way to prolong it, Belgarion.
Don't you think you're being just a little bit childish, Zakath?
Geryon snapped. His temper was starting to heat up again.
You're not accomplishing a single thing here in Tol Mergos. There's not one solitary drop of Urga blood left for you to spill, and you've got a situation at home that verges on disaster. Are you a king, or an emperor, or whatever you call it, or are you just a spoiled child? You refuse to go back to Malzeth just because somebody told you that you ought to. You even dig in your heels when someone assures you that you will die if you don't go back. That's not only childish, it's irrational. And I don't have the time to try to reason with somebody whose wits have deserted him. Well, you can huddle here in Rakhaga and nurse all your tired old griefs and disappointments until Saradus's predictions catch up with you, for all I care, but Geryon is my son, and I am going to Meloria. I've got work to do, and I don't have time to coddle you.
He had saved something up for last.
Besides, he added, in an insulting offhand tone, I don't need you anyway.
Zakath came to his feet, his eyes ablaze.
You go too far, he roared,
slamming his fist down on the table.
Amazing, Geryon said sarcastically. You are alive, after all. I thought I might have to step on your foot to get any kind of a response out of you. All right, now that you're awake, let's fight.
What do you mean, fight?
Zakath demanded, his face still flushed with anger.
Fight about what?
About whether or not you are going with us to Meloria.
Don't be stupid. Of course I am going with you. What we are going to fight about is your incredible lack of common courtesy.
Geryon stared at him for a moment and then suddenly doubled over in a gale of helpless laughter. Zakath's face was still red, and his fists were clenching and unclenching. And then a slightly sheepish expression came over his face, and he, too, began to laugh. Belgareth let out an explosive breath.
Geryon, he said irritably, let me know when you are going to do something like that. My veins are not what they used to be.
Zakath wiped at his eyes, though he was still laughing.
How long do you think it might take for you and your friends to get packed?
He asked.
Not too long, Geryon replied. Why?
I am suddenly homesick for Malzeth. It is spring there now, and the cherry trees are in bloom. You and Zenedra will love Malzeth, Geryon.
Geryon was not entirely sure if the omission of Bell was inadvertent or an overture of friendship. He was, however, quite sure that the Emperor of Meloria was a man of even greater complexity than he had imagined.
I hope you will all excuse me now, but I want to talk with Braedor and get a few more details about what is going on in Coranda. This Menga he told me about seems to be mounting an open insurrection against the crown. And I have always had a violent prejudice against that sort of thing.
I can relate to that,
Geryon agreed. For the next few days, the road between Rakhaga and the port city of Rakhtan was thick with imperial messengers. Finally, on a frosty morning when the sun was bright and the sky dark blue, when misty steam rose from the dark waters of Lake Haga, they set out, riding across a winter-browned plain toward the coast. Geryon, his gray raven cloak drawn about him, rode at the head of the column with Zakath, who seemed, for some reason, to be in better spirits than he had been at any time since the two had met. The column which followed them stretched back for miles.
"Volga, isn't it?"
the Malorian said wryly, looking back over his shoulder.
"I am absolutely surrounded by parasites and toadies, and they proliferate like maggots in rotten meat."
"If they bother you so much, then why not dismiss them?"
"I can't. They all have powerful relatives. I have to balance them very carefully. One from this tribe to match the one from that clan. As long as no family has too many high officers, they spend all of their time plotting against each other. That way, they don't have the time to plot against me."
"I suppose that's one way to keep things under control."
As the sun moved up through the bright blue winter sky at this nether end of the world, the frost gently dissolved from the long stems of dead grass, or fell lightly from the fern and bracken to leave ghostly white imprints of those drooping brown fronds on the short green moss spread beneath. They paused for a noon meal that was every bit as sumptuous as the one that might have been prepared back in Rakhaga, and was served on snowy damask beneath a widespread canvas roof.
"Adequate, I suppose,"
Sakath said critically after they had eaten.
"You are over-pampered, my lord," Polgara told him. "A hard ride in wet weather, and a day or so on short rations, would probably do wonders for your appetite."
Zakath gave Geryon an amused look.
"I thought it was just you. But this blunt outspokenness seems to be a characteristic of your whole family."
Geryon shrugged.
"It saves time."
"Forgive my saying this, Belgarion," Zadi interjected, "but what possible interest can an immortal have in time?"
He sighed rather mournfully.
"Immortality must give one a great deal of satisfaction, watching all one's enemies grow old and die."
"It is much overrated," Belgarath said,
leaning back in his chair with a brimming silver tankard.
"Sometimes whole centuries go by when one does not have any enemies, and there's nothing to do but watch the years roll by."
Zakath suddenly smiled broadly.
"Do you know something?" he said to them all. "I feel better right now than I have felt in over 25 years. It is as if a great weight has been lifted from me."
"Probably an after effect of the poison,"
Velvet suggested archly.
"Get plenty of rest, and it should pass in a month or so."
"Is she always like this?"
Zakath asked.
"Sometimes. She's even worse," Silk replied morosely.
As they emerged from beneath the widespread canvas, Geryon looked around for his horse, a serviceable roan with a long, hooked nose, but he could not seem to see the animal. Then he suddenly noticed that his saddle and packs were on a different horse, a very large dark gray stallion. Puzzled, he looked at Zakath, who was watching him intently.
"What's this?" he asked.
"Just a little token of my unbounded respect, Geryon. Your roan was an adequate mount, I suppose, but he was hardly a regal animal. A king needs a kingly horse. And I think you will find that Katien can lend himself to any occasion that requires ceremony."
"Katien?"
"That's his name. He has been the pride of my stable here in Tolmurgos. Don't you have a stable at Riva?"
Geryon laughed. "My kingdom is an island, Zakath.
We are more interested in boats than in horses.